Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Be future ready with a pension powered by Zurich's award-winning investment performance.
First today to Luxembourg, where Boris Johnson has met the Prime Minister of Luxembourg, Xavier Bettel. Now, both leaders were due to speak to the press afterwards, but Boris Johnson skipped the news conference, leading some to accuse him of chickening out. Mr. Bettel went on to speak regardless, and he pulled no punches in his warning to Boris and to the UK. He said the UK put themselves in this situation and it was not the EU's fault. Have a listen.
Our people need to know what is going to happen to them in 6 weeks' time. They need clarity, they need certainty, and they need stability. You can't hold their future hostage for party political gains. So now it's on Mr. Johnson. He holds the future of all UK citizens and every EU citizen living in the UK in his hands. It's his responsibility. Your people, our people, count on you. But the clock is ticking. Use your time wisely. Thank you.
Prime Minister Bettel, did you receive anything today from Mr. Johnson that you would characterise as a new proposal? And do you recognise his description so far that there has been great progress made?
For me, I just have one withdrawal agreement on the table, and it's the one from last year. There are no changes. There are no concrete proposals for the moment on the table. And I won't give an agreement to ideas. We need written proposals, and the time is ticking. So stop speaking, but act if you want that we are able to discuss about different proposals. But we won't accept any agreement who goes against the single market or who will be against the Good Friday Agreement. We still have a part of Ireland and Northern Ireland on our table in the future, who will still sit in my European family, and that's Ireland. And the solidarity with Irish colleagues and with Leo Varadkar is strong. And we won't let him alone in this topic. If they want that we are able to discuss about anything, we need it on the written side. But for the moment, I just have one written deal. I repeat, this Brexit, it's not my choice. It's been a decision from a party. It was a decision from David Cameron to do it. They decide. I deeply regret it. But don't put the blame on us because now they don't know how to get out of this situation. They put themselves in. People would love to have clarity. They would love to know what is going to happen in London, what is going to happen in the EU, and what will be their position. Imagine you are a European citizen in London, and you don't know how your future looks like. Imagine you are UK citizens living in Europe. You don't know if tomorrow you will need special agreements, if you're able to stay in a country, if you can send your children to school. People want clarification and as soon as possible. So to speak about new delays, just to postpone things, is not in the interest of our citizens.
You mentioned Parliament and him not having a majority. Did you actually ask him if he would remain within the law? He's indicated he wouldn't.
Yes, this wouldn't happen in Luxembourg.
Now, earlier in the day, Boris Johnson was booed by protesters after his meeting with European Commission President Juncker and the chief negotiator Michel Barnier. Joe Barnes is Brussels correspondent at the Daily Express, and he's on the line now from Luxembourg. Joe, good evening to you. That was quite some performance from the Luxembourg Prime Minister, and he really seemed to be relishing his moment in the media spotlight. He even addressed the lectern where Boris Johnson was due to stand beside him. Now, that's my impression watching it on television and listening to him. What, you were there. What was your takeaway from it?
So I was standing about 5 metres away from Xavier Bettel, and it was truly quite extraordinary. There was kind of worries. Was it undiplomatic? Was it the right thing to do since Boris Johnson didn't take the stand? But the normal kind of protocol in that, you would take one lectern away, you would take the British flag away, but they remained in place. And you was right, you have the picture of Xavier Bettel pointing and kind of gesticulating towards where Boris Johnson would have been standing. Quite extraordinary. So 75 people around that kind of number outside protesting, shouting various anti-Brexit and anti-Boris slogans. And the noise was quite intense. You wouldn't have been able to hear clearly if the protest was carrying on over Boris Johnson. And so that was why Number 10 have kind of said, while they're trying to organise, look, we don't think that would be fair on either of the leaders. They won't be heard. But so we've spoken to David Pike, who actually led the protest and organised the protest outside. And he said he asked his kind of gang of protesters to be quiet and respect Bettel, but couldn't promise the same for when Boris Johnson took to the stage.
But do you think, Joe, the fact, as you say, that they left the lectern in place, the flag in place, is it indicative of perhaps the tone of the meeting that had taken place between Prime Minister Johnson and Mr. Bettel, that it was less than friendly?
It potentially definitely could kind of suggest that. Xavier Bettel has been one of the harshest critics on Brexit, so he's previously called Brexiteers liars, and one of the journalists there did ask him about it, and he kind of skirted around that issue, but he was definitely hostile, and he's always been a massive critic of Brexit, and you could tell that he was very, very passionate when he was kind of saying, look, we don't want you to keep prolonging this agony, this uncertainty. What we want is answers now, and you're not giving them to us, so please give them to us now. And he repeated the famous Donald Tusk line, and basically said, look, don't waste the time we've given you. And we're now 45 days away. So he probably is fairly angry that British government haven't tabled any propositions yet.
We heard, yes, the lines that we've heard before, the clock is ticking, use your time wisely and so on. But we also heard, and at the same time as over the weekend and even today, Boris Johnson is saying, the shape of a deal is there. We're working hard. We're getting there. We're going to intensify our discussions. It's information. And then you have Mr. Bettel and indeed Juncker earlier saying, you know, we need more than words. There is an agreement on the table, but that's the May deal and that's the only deal we've seen.
So there are negotiations going on in Brussels behind the scenes. So David Frost, who's Boris Johnson's chief negotiator, has been over twice, and they also had a meeting which they kept private and secret in between of just technical kind of negotiators. Basically teams of customs and regulatory officials looking at ways to kind of sort the backstop out and have it so the backstop never comes into force and what Boris Johnson is trying to achieve. But one thing that's interesting from today, it looks like they're going to now hold daily meetings in Brussels between UK and EU officials to really intensify. And Boris Johnson said he wanted to accelerate the process, and he had the agreement of Michel Barnier and Jean-Claude Juncker for that today.
Just to come back to those protesters, because usually Boris Johnson is a man who relishes engaging with hecklers, and there was a security in place in Luxembourg, as you say, about 75 protesters. Is it surprising that maybe his security people said, look, no, this is not going to happen. But it seems surprising that he didn't relish that type of engagement, because he can respond well and even feed off the hecklers sometimes.
The noise levels were, there was only 75, and I haven't been to Downing Street when there's been protests outside there recently. But the noise level was quite extraordinary. When Boris Johnson first entered the building and left, you couldn't hear the person standing next to you. So would he have been able to be heard over a protest outside? And say one suggestion was that the two government officials had tried to move the protest inside, but they said, look, we just can't accommodate everyone. So it'd be a chance of only a few journalists can come in and so and such. So there has been an effort to organise this.
Okay.
But
okay.
I think there has been a bit of a feud as well. And that's potentially why Xavier Bettel came out and did his own piece.
But apart from the Downing Street statement, has anybody had the opportunity yet to ask Boris Johnson why? Why were you not there?
So he did a clip with Sky News and broadcasters after leaving thing, and he basically said, look, it wouldn't have been fair on our friends from Luxembourg because wouldn't have been heard.
Yeah, it's the Downing Street line, really.
He said, I don't think it would have been fair to the Prime Minister of Luxembourg. There was clearly going to be a lot of noise and our points would have been drowned out.
Okay, well, Joe, thank you very much indeed for joining us from Luxembourg this evening. That's Joe Barnes, the Brussels correspondent with the Daily Express. Now, as we heard earlier, the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson got a serious tongue-lashing this afternoon from Luxembourg's Prime Minister, and this was after a bilateral meeting. Stop speaking and act was his urgent message. For more on Boris Johnson and the difficult week that lies ahead for him, I'm joined by Alistair Campbell, former advisor to Tony Blair. I don't know, Alistair, if you had an opportunity to watch the Luxembourg Prime Minister's performance at that news conference earlier, where he stood beside that empty lectern. But if you did, or if you've been reading the remarks, what do you make of it and what he's been saying?
What I make of it is that the UK is becoming a bit of an embarrassment to the world. I think we're becoming a global laughingstock. And if you remember, one of the great lines that the liars of Leave, as David Cameron seems to call them in his book, that they peddled during the referendum, that the reason we get a great deal is because they need quotes, they need us more than we need them. And now you've even got Luxembourg, which I think I'm right in saying is the second smallest member of the European Union. I think Malta's a bit smaller. You've got the Prime Minister of Luxembourg feeling perfectly confident and standing up there. And, you know, and he's probably the most mild-mannered of the 28 European leaders, Xavier Bettel. But I think what he's shown is that just people are running out of patience with this clown. And, you know, I was at Belfast at the weekend for the People's Vote rally, and I was thinking on the way back, God, how often did we used to fly backwards and forwards to Belfast, backwards and forwards to Dublin, when we were involved in the negotiations leading up to the Good Friday Agreement? There's Johnson. He talks about intensive negotiations. And as Juncker said again today, he has not put forward a single piece of paper with a single credible, coherent plan. I mean, this is a joke, I'm afraid, and I just think it's embarrassing and it's shameful.
Okay, put aside your position at the moment and talk to me as a strategist. You know, put the personal politics aside if you can. And just imagine you're advising Boris Johnson. He's facing a Supreme Court decision tomorrow over the proroguing of Parliament. He's facing accusations that he lied to the Queen 45 days out from the Brexit deadline. He's in government without a majority. I don't know if I've forgotten anything. A party in revolt. What should he do?
Well, the one thing he is, he's the Prime Minister. And it's hard to say put my own feelings to one side. I mean, that colours my feelings quite deeply because I've always felt the guy is a charlatan. Therefore, it's difficult. But he has to represent the national interest. Now, if it's, and he says, and okay, he led the Leave campaign and they won, and he says that he wants to deliver Brexit with a deal on October the 31st. Well, in which case, what he has to do is to put forward in writing so that the other side can see them. And I think it would help the debate if the public and others could see them too, and politicians could see them as you did so. And yes, you know, I accept that in negotiations you have to keep a few things quiet, and sometimes the media publicity and the rest of it doesn't necessarily help. But it's not as if we don't know what the issues are. So set out what are the means by which he intends to reach his objective. Instead of which, the reason why I think Bettel said, stop talking and start acting, he just blathers away. He comes up with new little sound bites. You know, one minute, no deal is a million to one. The next minute is touch and go. He's cautiously optimistic. He's optimistically cautious. We've reached a point in our politics, with him and Trump in particular, where words no longer have any true meaning at all. And so he's got to set out what it is that he's trying to do. Now, if, as some people suspect, his actual game is to try, is that he wants out whatever, and getting out without a deal, he accepts that he doesn't have the support in Parliament for that and doesn't have the support in the public for that. But, so what he's trying to do is to set up other people to blame. And so I think that all I would advise him to do is actually, and he finds this very, very difficult, is actually to be honest about the choices he is facing and about the choices facing the country. Instead of which, we've basically got a very unfunny comedy reality TV show. That is what he is becoming.
I suppose Dominic Cummings, his strategist or advisor, he's really his Alistair Campbell, isn't he? And he's now become the focus and the target for media criticism, which perhaps suits Boris Johnson to have it that way. But do you have any sympathy for Cummings?
No, none at all. And you know, because I think that this is the guy who, I think the whole Benedict Cumberbatch thing has gone to his head. The referendum campaign was, you know, yes, they won, but let's not pretend that it was won honestly. It was won dishonestly. There were still police investigations going into the funding and other issues attached to it. So I think that And I think it's a look. As the phrase goes, became the story. But it took, it took nigh on a decade for that to happen. It seems to me that Cummings is rather enjoying this idea of being the kind of, the Boris Johnson's brain and so forth. But the thing I have to tell you is I don't see what the strategy is. And the difference, I think, between a campaign and government when you're the prime minister, it's a very, very different thing. And I think that what the problem with Boris Johnson is that he's always really seen politics as a game. And it is about his own advancement. I think David Cameron's assessment of the weekend is absolutely spot on. We've now got a prime minister passionately arguing for an outcome that he knows is going to damage the country, having won a referendum, siding with a cause that he didn't actually believe in. I mean, I have a horrible feeling that our politics has gone completely insane.
And now you're quoting David Cameron from his memoir, the man who, if you like, started the ball rolling on all of this.
Well, he did. And, and it is all a bit weird. I mean, at the weekend, I said I was comparing the rally at Belfast and I said, look, world is taking a very funny turn. I've been kicked out of the Labour Party. I've just joined a standing ovation for Dominic Grieve, the Tory MP. And it's like that. But that's what this is doing.
Did you ever think
politics.
You'd see the likes of that? And talking about being kicked out of the Labour Party, would you think now of maybe taking a jump and joining the Lib Dems?
No, I wouldn't. I don't. And also, I'm not persuaded by what they did yesterday in terms of, look, I hate Brexit. I hate what it's doing to the country. I hate what it's doing to our politics. But I think that it having been delivered or leave having been delivered by a referendum, I think it's quite a tough call for you then to say, well, actually, we'll just undo it.
This is Jill Swinson's line of canceling Brexit without a referendum, without reference back to the people.
I think the best way to proceed on this is actually for their... I mean, I'm very worried about the Brexit issue being wrapped up as an election issue, because I think that the reason why Boris Johnson wants that to happen is because in our electoral system, with Labour and the Lib Dems, both essentially anti-Brexit parties, or maybe not Corbyn, but certainly the party, that their vote splits, Johnson can get a reasonable majority, on not little much over a third of the vote. Whereas I think a referendum, having delivered the vote for Leave, I think it's only fair, if you like, that it should be, if it's going to be reviewed democratically, as I believe it should be, I think that should be in a final say referendum, where the choice is between Remain and a credible, deliverable deal.
We've done this entire interview without talking about the DUP up until now, but you were in Belfast at the weekend. You know the DUP well from your time with Tony Blair. I don't know if you had an opportunity to meet anybody from the party while you were in Belfast, or to take the pulse of where their thinking is at right now.
Well, I don't know is the honest answer, but I'll tell you what I really was struck by. And this isn't just, most of the time that I was there, I was, if you like, amongst people who agreed with me in terms of where we are on the Brexit debate, but out and about as well, the thing I was really, really struck by was how keen people were to say that they didn't feel they had anybody in government who spoke for them. They felt that the UK government doesn't speak for them and that the DUP doesn't speak for them. And I do think that and I know that when I made my own my own speech at the rally, mm-hmm. by far the line that got the loudest response was when I suggested that instead of seeing the Northern Ireland politicians strutting in and out of Downing Street, is there any chance they could actually try and get the institutions for which the Good Friday Agreement made them responsible up and running and actually do the jobs? And I got a sense of real, genuine frustration. But listen, the DUP need to understand that, I mean, I don't know the truth of what's going on in these so-called negotiations. They're certainly not intensive. There's certainly not, to my mind, a lot of hard work going on. But I suspect that if the only way for Boris Johnson to save his skin was to throw the DUP under a bus, I suspect he would do it. So I don't know whether they are thinking about moving their position, but the fact is something is going to have to give. Otherwise, there will be no deal. If there is no deal, we're then in this extraordinary position, and I do think it's truly extraordinary that we now have a British Prime Minister, I've just watched his interview on the BBC just now, who is still saying, whatever happens, he will not be asking for an extension, even though it is now the law of the land.
And just very briefly, Alistair, you, as you talk about Northern Ireland representation in Westminster, are you saying at all Sinn Féin should be taking their seats?
I'm aware of that. I'm aware that that occasionally rises up the agenda in the debate. I'd be very, very surprised if ever it happened. I mean, it would be quite a turn up for sure. And there's a part of me that thinks, oh God, that really would put the cat among the pigeons and sort things out. But I cannot see that happening.
Alistair Campbell, thank you for your time this evening.